Save big on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine Exterior is Dutch Boy's most durable exterior paint. With its Rain Rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Basically, the entire world makes fun of this man, okay? In MAGAland, they don't appreciate what a global planetary joke Donald Trump is to the world. They think of Donald Trump as this tough guy who scares everybody. Well, he scares everybody in the same way that, a five-year-old walking around on a roof holding a bomb might scare you. But he's not, he's weak and pathetic and stupid. I mean, most old people think he's an idiot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and because I'm not a lawyer, I've asked my good friend George Conway from the Society for the Rule of Law to explain the legal news to me. And George and I are both remote because we are both traveling. Or wait, I'm remote. Are you remote? Where are you? You in your house?
Yeah, well, I'm in my house, so that's remote enough.
Okay, we're remote because I'm in Denver. George is coming to Denver. And next week, we're going to do our show together at the Aspen Ideas Festival, which will be after the debate. And so it should be a good time for us to get together. We also should have a verdict by then from the Supreme Court on the immunity case,
probably,
which we do not have currently. I thought we may get some decisions today, but they didn't do anything.
Yeah, no, we should have something by then. But it's the Thursday evening. I'm pretty sure we're going to have something by then. It would be surprised if I kicked it over to Friday, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, since we don't have anything from the Supreme Court, I want to start with the New York hush money case. Because on Tuesday, the New York Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in New York, declined to hear Trump's gag order appeal. And the court dismissed the appeal upon the ground that no substantial constitutional question is directly involved. What do you think? Good call?
I think that no substantial constitutional question was directly involved. I think they were right. I mean, I don't, after on this record, I don't know how the gag order could not be sustained. And so he loses again. I mean, I think the real question would be to what extent the gag order restrictions will remain in place going forward in the future. But if this was just an appeal of what his prior challenges to the gag order, which were meritless and remain meritless. I think the question will be exactly who will he be restrained from in the future from going after. I think it definitely should be jurors. I think maybe not. I think the question of whether or not he can talk about witnesses now is a little bit less significant as a practical matter because he's guilty. And the witnesses all testified. I mean, he's still subject to gag orders in these other cases, and particularly the one in D.C., where all the people he dealt with in his administration who now may testify against him are potentially the subject of his ire, and that could get him into trouble in the future.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you about the gag order, because he's going into this debate, right? And he's going to get asked about these court cases, and if Biden's doing anything right, he's at least playing some offense on these court cases. So how does a gag order across the board here impact what he can say during the debate?
Well, I think to the extent the gag orders involve witnesses in cases that are still in play, I mean, he can't talk specifically about witnesses, but he can make general declarations of innocence. He can actually attack the court. Which he figured out he was free to do for a very long period of time. And he's going to declare his innocence. He can do all of those things. There's nothing that prevents him. What he can't do is he can't say that so-and-so who's going to test, you know, Mark Meadows, I don't know, I'm just picking a name out of a hat, who's going to test, suppose he thinks Mark Meadows is going to give bad testimony in the January 6th trial in the future. I mean, he can't trash individuals like that. But I don't think it's necessarily rational for him to want to do that, because that just gets him into the muck of what he's accused of. Of course, just because it would be irrational for him to get into that level of detail doesn't mean that he wouldn't just make stuff up about these people and talk about them and get himself into trouble, because that's Donald Trump. He can't control himself.
Well, this is where I have sort of a broad observation about things that are helping Trump, right? Like, if you ask me what is the best thing that ever happened to Donald Trump, it would be getting kicked off Twitter, right? Because everybody who imposes a gag order on Trump is basically helping Trump. Like, when I think about the debate that's upcoming and, like, the rules that are going to be helpful to Trump, the fact that they're going to cut off the mics after your time is up, to me, is a huge benefit for Trump.
I agree with that. I would just let him, I would give them the power to cut him off. But I wouldn't necessarily cut him off when he's ranting and raving, because I think American people need to see that. And I think the real question is, how is CNN going to exercise that prerogative? I don't think, you know, is it going to be necessarily immediate, or are they going to, you know, hold a little bit on the trigger finger, because it'll make things a little more exciting and more interesting and, frankly, more informative for the American public. I absolutely agree with you. We want this guy foaming at the mouth, and he will foam at the mouth if you give him the opportunity. I think one of the things the Biden campaign needs to do going into this debate over Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week is start going after Trump in ways that make him very annoyed. Talking about the convictions, making fun of his slurred speech, doing all of those things, but doing it in overdrive in the 3 or 4 days leading to the debate, and doing everything you can to basically create narcissistic injury in this very deranged and very disordered individual, who can't really take the criticism and can't take the heat and can't take the specifics of what he has done and what he about his own, the facts of his own life.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about your views on Trump's narcissism just as it relates to how he's been the last, I don't know, since he's basically been out of the White House, he has cocooned himself in a right-wing ecosystem that is so friendly, so devoted to him, that, like, he doesn't take much of a punch ever, you know? Nobody's ever going after him, right? He's always with sycophants, always with people who don't challenge him. And so I wonder if Biden is able to go on offense to some degree, and I think that it would really behoove Biden from a number of ways, both from a sense of, like, oh, look at Biden the fighter. Look at Biden taking it to Trump. Biden looks sharp. And I think Biden is at his sharpest when he's engaging back and forth, like, in the State of the Union, his best moments were when Republicans were heckling him and he was pushing back.
Yeah. He gets energized. I mean, he has that Irish in him.
Gets the Irish up.
We need to get that going without getting, you know, he shouldn't be getting mad and angry. He should be sticking the knife in whenever he can. And when Trump says something crazy, just look over at him and say, are you all right? And just, you know, mock him mercilessly. And I think that has a couple of effects. One is it will provoke the man and show that the man is uneven. Trump is of uneven keel. And I also think we always talk about, well, can you do anything about the Trump base? And they're just completely committed. Well, they're going to be watching this. And the weaker Trump looks in terms of his self-control and the fact that basically, the entire world makes fun of this man, okay? In MAGA land, they don't appreciate what a global planetary joke Donald Trump is to the world. They think of Donald Trump as this tough guy who scares everybody. Well, he scares everybody in the same way that, you know, a five-year-old walking around on a roof holding a bomb might scare you. But he's not, you know, he's weak and pathetic and stupid, and you know, we mock him all the time. I mean, most normal people think he's an idiot. And I think that if you can just sort of convey a little of that reality to the MAGA base, and because what the people that watch Fox News and read Newsmax and read Breitbart, all these people do are trying to try to shelter themselves from the reality that is Donald Trump, which is that people do not respect Donald Trump and that he's a joke, and it will demoralize them. And I think that's another reason why it's important for the Biden campaign and everybody else to get in on the act and start attacking this guy mercilessly, because it makes him look weak and small, because he doesn't really have very many friends. And once he's out of that cocoon, as you point out, Sarah, he doesn't have any protection.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Yeah, you know, you must have prepared lots of people for big moments, right? Or you yourself must have prepared for big moments to be up in front of the Supreme Court, arguing cases. So there's a lot of prep in those things, making sure
preparing witnesses to testify is the big one.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. So, like, how would you prep Joe Biden for this? Because I got to say, you've said a couple things in here that I think are interesting, but I would view as a challenge if I was prepping him, because you want him to both be presidential, right? Look like he has command of things, Joe Biden, while also sort of pushing Trump, but without doing it in such a way that it looks unserious.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I don't think this is not going to be a policy debate. So I wouldn't have the president poring over policy items, because he's extremely well versed in the policy items. He doesn't really need help in that regard. There may be 3 or 4 things that he'll want to emphasize, factoids that and accomplishments that he'll want to emphasize from time to time. But by and large, what I'd be doing is I'd be preparing him to attack Trump in very, you know, relatively gentle tone. In a relatively gentle tone, by just saying, matter of factly, my opponent is an adjudicated rapist. My opponent is a convicted felon. My opponent is a pathological liar. My opponent lies about everything. Just say it in a matter of fact way, and not, you know. And then when Trump reacts to it, have a series of one liners saying, this is exactly my point. He cannot handle this. He's not well. Look at him. He's about to lose it. Do you need to talk to your lawyers, Donald? Do you need to talk to your shrink? I wouldn't do the shrink thing, maybe, but that's the kind of thing. It's just practicing the attitude, I think, is the most essential thing. And the other thing about Donald Trump, preparing for a debate for Donald Trump, I've never done it. I defer to people who actually have done it. But if you took the last 15 speeches he's given, rambling, craziness, you could get 2 things out of them. One is you're going to get about 5 or 6 things, maybe 10 or 15, that you know he absolutely will say. Because he says the same things over and over again. The man has not had an original thought since 1987. Okay? So it's like he's easy to prepare for. Okay? You know what his pitches are. They're not very good. There are the same pitches, and they're usually in the same order. And so I think he's not that hard to prepare for. And in terms of, I think this is going to be all attitudinal, and it's going to be a lot of theatrics. And I think it's about drawing him out and making him look like the crazed lunatic that he actually is. And I think Joe Biden will be successful in this if that's what they're going to try to do, which is what they should do, because, you know, look, I mean, he's got 1 billion times the emotional intelligence of Donald Trump.
Hey, y'all, it's Tim Miller, and I'm the host of the Bulwark Podcast, which comes out every weekday afternoon, rain or shine, hangover or no hangover. Here's what's special about this podcast and my colleagues at the Bulwark. Number one, we're all united in a mission to preserve democracy and defeat the bad orange man. Number two, as outcast Republicans, we have no future career prospects in government, so we can tell you the truth, no BS. And number three, as we get to the home stretch of the election, there's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days. So you're going to need a place where you can come, where you can hear from experts who can talk about what's important in the fight to defeat Donald Trump. So check out the Daily Bulwark Podcast with all your Never Trumper favorites, plus a diverse array of guests with different perspectives and backgrounds who are ready to talk about the news of the day. Find the Bulwark Podcast on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about trying to debate Trump is that I think for Joe Biden, that he can't really go too hard. I mean, he needs to look presidential, but also for Joe Biden right now, so much of this debate is about him showing he can do the job, right? Like, people want to see State of the Union Joe Biden. They want to see, like, if he's a little aggressive, good. Like, that is going to help, because he's got a, you know, the right-wing media ecosystem has does nothing but feed people images of Joe Biden that look like he is in a senior citizen's home being spoon-fed oatmeal. And when he exceeds those expectations...
He's on drugs.
Yeah, he's on drugs, right? Like,
he's Trump's on drugs. They got him drugged up.
Yeah, Trump's already out there trying to, like, lower expectations by being like, well,
which is very unusual for Trump. That's very unusual for him.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was on with Maggie Haberman on CNN last night on Anderson Cooper, and she was saying, she had new reporting that says Trump is preparing very hard for this, and he's actually preparing.
Maggie knows more than anybody about what's going on in Trump world at any given time. And I'm sure they are trying to prep him. But my understanding of what the preps have been in the past, both from reading it in the newspaper and hearing it otherwise, is that he doesn't actually do debate prep the way you or I would do debate prep. You and I would stand up with a podium and we'd have somebody dressed up as Donald Trump, if we were, you know, President Biden. And we practice one-liners, we'd practice answering particular kinds of questions. We'd practice, you know, and we'd have, you know, I mean, that's what my friend Philippe Raines did in 2016, apparently not sufficiently well, when he played Donald Trump in prepping Hillary Clinton. I mean, I love Philippe. I'm sure Philippe did the best job he could. He doesn't do it that way. He doesn't like doing it that way. He wants to sit around at a table and listen to people talk and then talk over them, which is, you know, what he does. I mean, it reminds me of one time there was this violence. It's about trying to prep a guy for a Supreme Court oral argument. And he just said, instead of actually standing up to the podium where we thought we were going to ask him questions and pretend to be justices, he just said, I just want to come in and, you know, talk about the case. And it's kind of like what Donald Trump does. I don't know that that's particularly effective. But I don't know what would be effective with this man. I mean, really, with him, it's going to be a function. His success in this debate, Donald Trump's, is going to be the degree to which he's able to exercise emotional control for 90 minutes or 2 hours or whatever the time limit is. And that's why you saw, I think, I don't know if you saw the clips this morning, but there was a clip I saw on Twitter of Newt Gingrich basically saying Donald Trump has to be calm and presidential. And it's like, dude, when have we ever seen that?
This is the thing, is that if Donald Trump, the best thing he could do for himself is to say very little and just be chill. Like, if he could do that, because he lost, in my opinion, he lost the election last in 2020 during that first debate. I remember doing focus groups after that first debate and people were like, what just happened? Why? What was that? And people sometimes, you know, it's interesting because this time you have these two functional incumbents and you'd be things that don't usually matter, like vice presidents or debates. I think they matter a ton this time. And they mattered more last time, too, because we were in COVID and they weren't like campaigning as much. And so it was one of the bitter opportunities to see them. But Trump coming out foaming at the mouth and Joe Biden standing there just being like, would you shut up, man? Like, that,
I think Joe could have done a better job. Then I think he got a little mad. And you don't really want to show that you're mad. You want to show, look at this guy.
Yeah.
Seriously? That's the attitude he's got to convey. And I don't actually, when I think about it, there are very few politicians in American life today who I think could handle that the way Joe Biden could. I think he's actually got the perfect emotional makeup for it. And I think he's going to do a great job. And so that's the way I see this shaping out. And I think the real key for the Trump people is to try to, you know, keep this guy under emotional, you know, under emotional wraps for 90 minutes, you know, without falling asleep. That's the trick he used in the courthouse. We can't use that. But he's got to disassociate himself from all of his anger and all of the things that trigger him. And, you know, he may not come in the way I think he's been told. Look, that first debate in October in Cleveland, where you gave your opponent, tried to kill your opponent with the virus. Just joking. That was terrible. That didn't work out. People didn't like that. So I'm sure he's been told that 1,000 times since then and since. And so I think he's not going to. I think he's even said at some point. I think he was quoted somewhere saying he understands he can't go in, you know, loaded for bear the way he was 4 years ago. But that said, the Biden campaign needs to bring some of that back by poking at him. And they need to start poking at him on Monday morning, you know, just get all the way to Atlanta. Okay, do whatever they can so that he hears Joe Biden and Joe Biden surrogates making fun of him and talking about his 34 felony convictions and his rape verdict and the defamation verdict and that he's a fraudster and that he doesn't know Estonia from Latvia. I don't know. Whatever you can say. He actually confused
the neither Baltics do most with voters
with the Balkans once. He's just so out of it. Donald Trump is.
Okay, we got to pay some bills really quickly, and it's good news, okay. George. We've got your favorite sponsor today. We got Factor.
Which one?
Factor.
Okay.
I know you've got several favorites, but here we go. Warmer, sunnier days keep coming, and you need to fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. We all have wellness goals we try to meet before and during summer, and you can use Factor's menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto to achieve them. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. And there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. And you can choose. And you got the app. And you can choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat a well-balanced meal. You can also discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. Treat yourself to restaurant-quality meals that
jalapeno,
feature premium ingredients
lime,
like
lime cheddar chicken,
filet mignon, shrimp, and blackened salmon. Okay, George, tell us what you like. Give us your favorites.
I like the chicken things. Let me go here. Here's one I like. This is the jalapeno lime cheddar chicken.
Yeah.
Very good. Nice.
All right.
And, you know, there's a lot of other good stuff here.
Head to factormeals.com/AskGeorge50 and use the code AskGeorge50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code AskGeorge50 at factormeals.com/AskGeorge50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Awesome.
Look at this one. Tomato, basil, cavatappi, and Italian sausage. Look at that.
You know, at some point, Factor should get it. We should do like a George, you know, favorite meals list.
I'm done. I'm just going to have lunch. See ya.
No, because we got to talk about Mar-a-Lago in the classified documents case.
Mar-a-Lago.
There's a little bit there.
This is a better food than you get at Mar-a-Lago, I'm sure.
It's a busy week or two in Judge Cannon's courtroom down in Florida. First of all, on Monday, Judge Cannon denied another of Trump's motions to dismiss the case, right? That was good.
Yes. yeah, well, I mean, you know, I mean, it's fine. It's fine. Okay. I mean, well, the question is, what's she going to do from now on in? I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, she's hearing these crazy motions on whether or not the special counsel is properly constitutionally appointed, which he clearly is. But part of me wants, like, hopes, like, okay, maybe you want to get that wrong. Maybe we want her to get that wrong and throw out the case. And that would bring her up to the Court of Appeals. And maybe they'll throw her off the case. I mean, I think one of these days that could happen. And, you know, one of these days, if she does something sufficiently screwy enough, that, I mean, that's the best. I think the course of justice would be best impacted by that sequence of event of her making one more egregious error and getting tossed off the case. And then maybe that's
I need you to explain this Jack Smith thing to me, because I don't really understand. So we're recording this on Thursday, and so on Friday, tomorrow, Cannon's holding a hearing on the question of whether Jack Smith's appointment as a special prosecutor was unconstitutional. Why would it be unconstitutional?
What's at issue here is the kind of officer the special counsel is. And the Constitution effectively distinguishes between two kinds of officers in the executive branch, leaving apart the president and the vice president, who are constitutional officers. That the Constitution distinguishes between principal officers and inferior officers. And basically what it says is that principal officers have to be appointed by the president, subject to the advice and consent of the Senate. They have to be Senate confirmed. And all other officers, the inferior officers, there are different methods by which Congress can designate those people to be appointed. They can be even appointed by judges if Congress so chooses. In fact, U.S. attorneys can be chosen by judges if there is not a Senate confirmee available. And so what the argument is by Steve Calabresi, who's a professor of law at Northwestern, has this screwball argument that he's been making since 2017, or after the Mueller appointment, that where he's arguing that a special counsel appointed pursuant to Department of Justice regulations by the Attorney General is not an inferior officer and must be Senate confirmed. And the argument is based on a number of faulty premises. One of them is that somehow, just because U.S. attorneys are confirmed by the Senate, then therefore they are superior officers, not inferior officers, and therefore a special counsel is the equivalent. And that's just baloney, because this, you know, all it takes for somebody to be an inferior officer is that they report to somebody, and the U.S. attorneys report to the Attorney General. They actually don't need to be Senate confirmed, except that Congress provided that they should be Senate confirmed, and so the same is true of basically everybody else who works in the Department of Justice, other than the Attorney General, because everybody reports to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General, of course, reports to the President. And so there is just no sensible argument. And it's amazing that the court is even holding oral argument on this. There's no sensible argument that the special counsel, who was appointed by the Attorney General, who can be fired by the Attorney General, whose office can be created, modified, or abolished by a regulation written by or amended by the Attorney General. There's no basis to conclude that he's anything but an officer that's inferior to the Attorney General of the United States, which is all that matters. Now, why she's taking it that seriously? I mean, is it just because she doesn't know any better? Is it because she's trying to run out the clock for Trump? I cannot tell you. It's probably some kind of, I don't know. I mean, it's probably some combination of motives there that I can't quite figure out. And, you know, this motion shouldn't be given the time of day. I mean, it was litigated in the Mueller era. To the D.C. Circuit, here at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, and they roundly rejected it in a very, very persuasive opinion. And, you know, there's no argument that this guy, I mean, who is the creature of Department of Justice regulation, is not inferior to the person who wrote the regulation, which is the Attorney General of the United States.
Just really quickly, and this might be a silly question, if they ruled that this special counsel, couldn't do this. Doesn't it say like no special counsels could exist? Like, isn't it they trying to? It seems like a weird time to make this argument.
No, it's not a weird time to make the argument in the sense that the philosophy of the Trump defense is basically make any motion you can to chew up whatever time you can for any purpose and then appeal it. And so this is, this at a minimum is meant to be a time-consuming motion, which...
So it's just ludicrous, though, like on its face.
Obliged. And so, I mean, it's perfectly consistent with the defense strategy to make the motion. I actually kind of perversely think, I actually signed on to a brief, an amicus brief, arguing against the Trump motion that a special counsel appointment is unconstitutional. And I know the lawyer who's going to go up and argue this, which is bizarre because you normally don't have amicus curiae counsel arguing in a district court. You don't even have them in the Supreme Court where they have lots of amici curiae. You don't see them often arguing. But I told, I kind of made a joke to him and said, you want to lose this motion. Lose the motion. Make a bad argument. Because, if she grants one of these crazy motions that he proffers out there, and it's really a no-brainer, which it is, I think there's a chance he could get her kicked off the case. And that would be, it's not going to help us this year, or it's not going to matter this year because this case is never going to go to trial in 2024. But I do believe that, ultimately he should be brought to justice for these. These are the open and shut crimes of the century.
Totally. All right. Well, we're still waiting for the immunity decision from the Supreme Court, and we're really close to the end. So we should get it soon. Do you want to make any predictions? Like, have you had any?
The one prediction I will make is that he will lose big. He will lose his argument that there, that he has some kind of an absolute immunity from criminal prosecution. I think what the wrinkle may end up being, and I can't say for sure. To read tea leaves on exactly how everybody's going to vote from that oral argument transcript is a treacherous task. But I do think there is something to the view, I think the best expression of it is from Professor Trevor Morrison of NYU, who basically says that he could see the court making, saying, yes, generally speaking, there is no special immunity for the president. But if there were a statute that were passed or were applied that would unduly infringe the president's core powers, as defined in, the famous case, the Youngstown seizure case, which is, I think, familiar to kids who take American government in high school. There could be some circumstances where it would be unconstitutional because you would be harming the president's ability to do his job. But that's not even remotely at issue here. So, I think it's very possible that we're going to get a relatively clean decision that will actually enable a trial to occur sometime in the fall. I don't think it would be completed in the fall. But it could easily start in the fall. I'm not sure necessarily that is a good thing politically anymore. I thought it would be a good thing politically to get the thing going as soon as possible. But one of the things we saw with the New York trial is it kept Trump off of people's radar screens, much the way
totally.
His deplatforming on Twitter did. And so I don't know. I don't necessarily. Think it's going to be helpful to get him off the campaign trail. I think the American people need to see as much of him as possible. I'm kind of now of two minds of whether I'd like the timing of the case at this point, even if it goes to trial before the election. We want to see this man babbling and screaming and saying crazy stuff everywhere. And if he's tied up in a Washington courtroom playing the victim, I don't know whether that's necessarily going to help, particularly in a case where the witnesses aren't going to, the testimony isn't going to be televised.
Yeah.
So that's a new viewpoint. That viewpoint of mine has changed over time. I mean, I would have preferred to see the trial much earlier. I think all of these trials should have been conducted earlier. I think the Mar-a-Lago case should have been tried in the spring, and he'd be guilty by now. He doesn't have a defense in that case. So I wish all of these things had happened more quickly, but they haven't. And that's fine. At the end of the day, he's going to show his face to the American people next Thursday, and we're going to see a lot more of him, and people are going to know what kind of a sicko he really is.
Yeah, I really agree that what we saw in the New York hush money case with him being in the courtroom and just like coming out and making these statements and it keeping him off the trail, it kept us looking backwards at the Stormy Daniels stuff, which it was literally being litigated, it had already been litigated in the minds of voters. And so the earlier we can, it is better to get people looking forward at the things that Trump will do in a second term, he'll be, the danger he'll be. I agree with you that it's a little tricky because you do want the salience of January 6th to be high. You do want people to remember it. Man, I'll tell you, voters have short memories. If there was something going on that was drawing people's attention to that, I remember during the January 6th committee, it really did have a depressing effect on enthusiasm for Trump. Because it is, when people are focused on it, they're like, oh, that was really bad, you know?
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. I just think that taking him off the airwaves for 6 weeks before the election could actually help him. That's all. I do think I would like to see some proceedings in the case. Just speaking at it purely politically, I wouldn't mind seeing something come out that reminds people of what happened on January 6th and puts pressure on him so that he becomes defensive about it and starts talking about protecting the hostages and pardoning the hostages and all of the crazy stuff that he says. I think that stuff is harmful to Trump. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's all going to come out in the wash anyway. I think we're going to hear a lot about January 6th. I think we're going to hear a lot about it from Trump. I think that I saw something interesting yesterday where basically a local news reporter, I forget where he's from, but he was basically talking about the outreach the Trump campaign is making to local news organizations. And essentially, if you talk about the stolen election, we're not going to talk to you, is basically what they're being told. Because his handlers don't want him talking about 2020. They don't want him talking about January 6th. Now, that's a different thing from actually keeping him from talking about it. But they actually are they want reporters in local markets to stay away from that because they don't want to talk about it. They don't want him talking about it. And, I think it's the job of the rest of us to make that conversation happen because he'll oblige us. Okay. He wants to talk about it. And I don't think, I think that's one of the problems that we're going to see over the next 3 months, 4 months, is that Trump's people and Trump are going to be not on the same page about what Trump wants to talk about.
Right. But it goes back to my point, I think, about everybody protecting Trump from himself. I understand why the local news organizations are doing it, but also, it really annoys sort of swing voters when Trump talks about 2020. They're just like bored by it and find it aggravating. The more he does that, the more I think he turns off swing voters. Correct. The more it's about him and his grievances, not about issues that voters care about. Right. And so again, everybody's sort of protecting Trump from himself these days.
Right.
And that is helping him out. Although,
That's why I say that the object of the Biden campaign and everybody working against Trump is to provoke him into talking about these things that his people don't want him talking about. And it's really not that hard to do.
Well, and I will leave you and our listeners with, we have seen post-conviction some real movement in the polls. There's just a big Fox News poll that came out yesterday, showed a big swing among independents, where Joe Biden is now winning in that poll, up by 2 points. But the most important thing is that directionally, there's an NPR Marist poll, an Echelon poll, there's been a bunch of polling since the conviction that is all directionally showing Joe Biden starting to tick up a little bit. And I don't think it's about the conviction per se, although I do think that has something to do with, I think it's about Trump coming back into frame for people.
Correct.
And I think
it's a combination. Yeah.
You have Donald Trump. Yeah, that the less they like him, the more they remember, oh yeah, this guy is the worst.
Oh, God, I remember. Oh, they remind of those press conferences that he had, and they had to turn those off, and oh, all the crazy stuff during COVID. Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, it's miserable. And you know, that's going to be part of what's going on in the debate, like we talked about. I mean, is he going to go off like a lunatic like he did 4 years ago and remind everybody of what they didn't like? And the job of the Biden campaign is to try to get him to do that, to bait him into doing that. It may not happen the first time, although I think it can. If it's, you know, I don't think he can emotionally control himself for long periods of time. And I think sooner or later we're going to see him go off the rails.
All right, George, as always, thank you for explaining the legal news
always
to me.
Fun. Well, there was little legal
and
news
to our listeners. Yeah, not as much legal news as
we'll
there is, although we got
that.
We got a lot of legal news coming down the pike. Next week is going to be a big monster show with the immunity case. We'll be post-debate. And so I can't wait to talk to you then. To our listeners, don't forget to hit subscribe. Leave us a review on your podcast app. Email us at askgeorge@thebulwark.com. And we will see you guys next week. Bye.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption to the legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last.